Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Thanks for the Knowledge, FanBite's weekly news show, rounding up the headlines and games and entertainment in one handy podcast. I'm your host, head of FanBite Media, John Warren. We have a jam-packed show for you this week. Lots of stuff happened in the news. I'm going to catch you up with what's happening next week. But first, I sat down with Alexis Cousy, aka Perk, the site director for Wowhead.com, to talk about the ongoing and troubling Activision Blizzard case. Let's get right to it. Of course, the big news from last week carried over into this week, and it is, of course, the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing suing Activision Blizzard for, among other things, gross misconduct and wage disparity. To help me wade through those waters, as well as to mention some of the other the other developments that we've seen this week, is the wonderful Alexis Cousy, the site director for Wowhead.com. Hi, Perk.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, of course. You are one of my only repeat guests. I feel like we have a few, but I'm glad you're back. Yeah. I wish it was under different circumstances.
Same.
Yeah. So I guess I want to start, you know, you and your team at Wowhead work on obviously, you know, very Blizzard centric properties. I want to just basically get a sense of like how things have been for y'all over the past couple weeks.
It's been a really tough situation. Lots of community building within the Wowhead team, but just a really rough period where we, many of us have had negative interactions with, you know, Blizzard and the community, and we are here reading the news, reliving our own traumas as we are trying to cover the news to the best of our abilities and raise awareness in the greater Warcraft community, many of whom were not aware of what was going on. You know, they were sort of blinded by the Blizzard hype, you know, bleed blue for life, that sort of thing. So it's been a pretty exhausting week. We are trying to be mindful of our mental health, but, you know, it's a really important topic. So we're trying to rise to the occasion and cover everything as best we can, you know, and just spread the word and let people in the Warcraft community know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, some of the developments that happened this week, we obviously had a walkout for employees on Wednesday. From kind of where you're sitting, how do you get a sense of how that went?
I think that it left a strong mark among players and also with a dark sense of humor among investors, because the stock market for Activision Blizzard was remaining pretty stable until the announcement occurred that the walkout was happening. And that led to a significant drop. And then Bobby Kotick suddenly changed Activision's tone in making replies to staff. So the walkout definitely made waves among the community, as well as with Activision. Of course, his statement didn't really address the demands of the people who were doing the organizing. So there's more work to do. But I think that everyone, you know, coming forward without a union to do the walkout was very brave. And, you know, we definitely stand with solidarity with them.
Yeah, and you alluded to the tone of course are also in major solidarity with the workers of Activision Blizzard for walking out, and also, you know, they have demanded a lot of things of their employer. They have not demanded any sort of boycotts, things like that. That's been an interesting kind of sub topic of, like,
I think, like, the community has sort of been policing who plays a game, who doesn't play a game. Should you quit Blizzard and stand another studio? And, like, that's not what the discourse should be about. That's taking away from the employee demands of, you know, better HR policies, fair pay, better hiring practices. And many AAA studios have similar problems, like we saw with the Riot lawsuit. So, fans definitely can muddy the waters a bit and just want to keep things on the message of the worker demands, not policing someone for playing a game or not.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's really important that folks really listen to those demands and not kind of overreach, because it can often make things worse for the folks that are actually trying to do things internally. We alluded to the tone as well. Last week we saw messages from Activision president Rob Kostich, not to be confused with Bobby Kotick, which is a bizarre naming convention. J. Allen Brack, as well as from the vice president of corporate affairs, Francis Townsend. Of those responses, before we get into Bobby Kotick's response, which of those kind of rubbed you the worst way?
So the ones, I mean, they were all bad in different ways.
They were all bad. Yeah, that's true. I guess it was a trick question.
Ones that were just flat out like, this is irresponsible and bad. Like, that was the obvious one. Like, it was just like, wow, this is super bad. Francis being like, well, I've never encountered this. Things are great. It's like, yeah, no kidding. You came from the White House and you've been here for 4 months in a top role. No wonder stuff's good. I think the one, though, that because I've worked so closely with Blizzard and Warcraft, the statements from J. Allen Brack and similar statements made by other top Blizzard employees, those were the ones that did sort of get under my skin the most, even though their tone was better, because you could see in the responses how things were allowed to fester so long. You know, they're saying, I've always been against bro culture. Like, I'm shocked, you know, I should have done better. And it's like, you know, thank you, architects of this, you know, toxic company. Thank you for being surprised. You had no idea it was there. So, you know, it hurts when, you know, I think back 15 years and I'm like, oh yeah, I thought these people were cool. And then there's just a lot of regret and sadness and knowing their messages have a better tone, but they're still kind of missing the point or not really acknowledging the role they played in upholding the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of passing the buck and kind of not addressing anything head on. Bobby Kotick's response was, I think, in tone, I guess, better, but it still kind of read to me as him wondering out loud, how did we allow this to happen, says the person that's like at the top of this company, which is just, you know, very, I think you should leave hot dog man going, we're trying to find the guy who did this. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. One of the things that you really latched onto this week on Twitter, which I thought was like a very good point that I've seen others make, but I had not really fully considered before, is, you know, Alex Afrasiabi, who was with the company until 2020, was named as one of the two people really specifically named in that lawsuit. WoW announced that the WoW team basically said, without naming him, hey, we're going to start actually, you know, changing some things in the game to basically distance ourselves from whatever. We all read between the lines and knew that referred to Alex Afrasiabi, and those things started to come out. Now, this in conjunction with the news that we found out that he did not leave in 2020, as had been, I think, previously reported. He was fired for misconduct. So that was a known entity within Blizzard. And you brought up the great point that, okay, they've known about this for more than a year, and it's only until they got caught that they're removing the Alex Afrasiabi stuff from the game. What kind of response have you seen from the community with this? And I don't know, speak a little bit about, like, you know, because it's definitely not new that WoW would use a real person in a game. It happens a ton. So it's just like, oh boy, this is a mess.
Yeah. So in recent years, when WoW tends to run into an issue with someone, even if it's not conclusively proven, they tend to remove the reference or voice acting quietly. And I believe the process for having an NPC named after you is more elaborate than it was in the past, when it was sort of more like, oh, are you friends with this person or a favor? So I even have an old school item named after myself.
yeah.
So I know a little bit about that process.
For sure.
But so I thought it was very surprising that, you know, we saw this Warcraft statement, and I'm thinking, okay, well, it's a step in the right direction. And then a day later in the Kotaku article, it was confirmed that Blizzard fired him in 2020. And I'm thinking,
right. Okay,
like that did not sit well with me. You know, how the Warcraft team makes the statement that, you know, they suddenly realized that they had inappropriate references in the game, but it was known for a year. And that actually lines up with the lawsuit, which was making it seem that, oh, you know, people would report stuff to management and they wouldn't do anything, or they would get off lightly. It definitely seems like they were trying to cover that up. The community response has been pretty positive towards me, although my Twitter is locked down pretty tightly. So
right.
If someone is arguing with me about it, I probably muted them a year ago for something else. But I do want to caution that, you know, there are people out there who are fully on the, you know, I'm not going to play Blizzard games train. I'm going to, you know, yell at the employees for working at Blizzard. Afrasiabi sucks. Like, there are people who are kind of riding the trolling train without just because they want to troll and don't fully understand the nuance of what's going on. But yeah, I was the Warcraft statement. I was originally kind of positive about it, and now I definitely got more disappointed when I realized they had sat on this news for a year before removing the references.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a tough question, but you've dealt with, I think, the some of the worst parts of communities as it, you know, pertains to Blizzard properties. You've seen a lot of things. You've been the brunt of some things as well. This kind of reckoning with this being so public, do you feel like this has been a really long time coming, or are you surprised that it came out the way it did?
I definitely feel like it's been a pretty long time coming, and it took a long period of people getting critical with other aspects of Blizzard to bring this to the forefront. You know, Blizzard was revered. Many of the people that currently are no longer with the company that were in charge of Blizzard earlier, they're, you know, pretty revered by the community, like they're untouchable. So it was a long time coming, as the culture had to change. People had to be really critical of Blizzard for other things, whether it was game releases or, you know, launching a game, Thanksgiving week, questions of crunch. 2020 had a lot of discussions about, underpaid employees.
Right.
I think it definitely had to be a slow transition towards being able to constructively critique the company for this reckoning to happen. I think if it was a few years earlier, it could have been squashed by a lot of, you know, hype and just, you know, the company PR machine.
Yeah. Well, we've heard rumors about, you know, rumblings about unionization, even though the workers have not actually said any of that stuff out loud. But Activision Blizzard did hire a law firm this week. That is notable for some union busting tactics in the past in terms of dealing with employee disruption, things like that. What path forward do you actually see for Blizzard, I guess, as a company, but I guess more importantly, the workers of Blizzard? Like, what do you think happens from here?
I mean, moving, I also to just go on to your point with the union busting, I did see a report earlier this morning from Uppercut Crit saying that Activision was canceling all hand meetings, instead having more smaller groups, one-on-ones, which is, you know, a tactic can be used to, prevent people from unionizing. I mean, I think that right now the momentum is on the workers' side. And, you know, there needs to be a big overhaul in terms of payment, and HR.
Yeah.
And I think that the workers can also use the post-COVID working landscape in their favor, because Irvine's a really expensive, boring place to live. I've been there. And if, you know, with so many more companies offering remote options or working from home or flexible things, Blizzard cannot just exploit people as, you know, you get to work at your childhood dream. They need to offer more. So, you know, I would definitely say, you know, keep pushing for, you know, wages that are on par with other companies in the area, you know, HR overhaul, really sticking to those four demands that they put in their statement of intent.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This is going to have some far-reaching consequences as well. We've seen pictures of some of the devs in question at BlizzCon and other events. They've gone on to do other things. I mean, Greg Street is one of them over at Riot. He's kind of dug himself into a hole. Whenever we see any sort of evidence that these folks are trying to do this, you know, deniability, we usually see something, you know, evidence to the contrary almost immediately. I guess what I want to know is, the pay disparity stuff is a major part of this, but, you know, how does Blizzard prevent these kind of like boys club things from forming in the first place, do you think?
I mean, just better hiring practices. There was, I believe, I mean, there was a statement that they made last year where they chose not to implement recommended diversity initiatives above a certain pay grade for top management because they thought it wasn't needed. So, I mean, there, it seems like there's some obvious ways in which they could be doing better. And, you know, going back to the article you mentioned, the Kotaku article made it seem like there were members of HR would even sort of stop by this party suite at BlizzCon. So, like, the whole system with HR is just broken if they're, you know, complicit in this or aware of what's going on.
Yeah. It's
living in Irvine, awful. I never thought, oh gee, let me maybe be cool if I worked at Blizzard instead. Like, there was just, you know, many of the reasons that made me uninterested in going there, I'm sure lots of other people have thought about as well, you know, between the pay, the hours, just sort of like the lack of diversity, you know, hearing things, you know, I think BlizzCon for the longest time, they didn't have a policy with like harassment or security. It was pretty bare bones. It just, you know, didn't seem to be a thoughtful place that took these sorts of issues into account.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough, and it's going to take a reckoning top to bottom, you know, in order to really shake things up there. And I don't know. It's like whenever I see, you know, they really made a big deal of in the lawsuit, really one of the first pages was, you know, a display of the pay disparity, you know, mentioning that I think it's 20% of the workforce is women to begin with, but those roles at the top are just basically not available to them. We saw the pay disparity from Bobby Kotick, and then even the folks below him, there's a huge gap. But then the folks in that section and then below are that gap is just enormous as well. I think, yeah, I don't know how you, I just don't know how you correct a problem that is so unbelievably corrupt from the top without unionizing. So I just like, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things that we're still super interested in watching. I think it's sad for obviously a lot of the workers of Blizzard who have not only been victims of this, but just like, you know, have nothing to do with this. I mean, we've seen this at Riot as well with teams that are so isolated from the executives that are dealing with this, getting kind of abuse rained down on them. It's just a terrible situation.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really bad for customer service, especially because, you know, they're the ones that are really not making lots of money, and they're the ones dealing with the worst of the community reactions and trolls, people opening tickets to just, you know, send them abuse. It's not good.
Yeah.
people should not be harassing Blizzard employees for, you know, staying at their jobs. And
no.
A lot of community people don't seem to realize that this is a problem across many game studios.
Yes.
So you can't just say, oh, leave Blizzard, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm exclusively going to play League of Legends, because it's like, well, didn't you
Riot's got issues.
By your logic, then, you know, Riot, you shouldn't play any Riot games. Or no one should work at Riot.
Yeah.
Someone
said that about Final Fantasy 14 as well. And like
one of the former
workers there was like, just like, well, this is everywhere. This is a problem everywhere.
I mean, I do agree unionization would definitely help.
Right.
I'm just, you know, Blizzard has to fix their systems as well. To not sweep things under the rug.
Yeah. Are there any other details or points you've been kind of dwelling on since this stuff broke over the past couple weeks?
I mean, there's been a lot. It's only been 1 week.
I know. It's crazy. It's been like, I think, 7 or 8 days since all this stuff happened. It's just, it's wild.
So, I mean, I do think the, I'm glad we brought up the stock market price seeming to change Bobby's tone, as well as, you know, the walkout announcement was the thing that made the prices drop. Let's see.
I mean, money talks. I mean, I think that's like the only way to communicate with people as completely isolated from the issue is Bobby Kotick. I really do.
I guess something that's been sticking around in my head as well was there was this video clip that surfaced of fan from 2010 asking during the Blizzard Q&A, the devs were up on the stage, all white men, and she was asking a question about, you know, greater variety in how they portray female characters. She gave the example of Sylvanas, who's a very complicated, powerful character, who's basically wearing a over-the-top plate bikini. And it stuck with me for a few reasons, because you have the devs basically laughing at her and giving a response, you know, along the lines alluding to a Victoria's Secret catalog and saying, oh, yeah, well, she can look, you know, we'll pull her inspiration from another catalog, you know, very sexist, you know, laughing at her in front of a whole auditorium. And then the whole group of fans booed her.
Right.
And when I see statements from former Blizzard employees, like, you know, President Mike Morhaime, when they're like, oh, you know, I guess we didn't do enough. And it's like, or, you know, all people like, oh, I believe he didn't know what was going on. It's like, well, here is this clip from your convention where a woman stands up and gets booed by everyone. Like, you didn't think this was a problem. And, you know, shame on everyone on the stage for, you know, just making a joke out of the situation and not coming forward to diffuse it as well. Like, that stuck with me because there's been so many moments I've heard from others or observed firsthand where, you know, the community does something toxic and Blizzard response just sort of lets it happen. And that was really infuriating to see.
They seem very afraid to rein in their worst fans. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, maybe it's like corporate engagement. Like, even there's been some questionable narrative decisions where it seems dialogue is vague or left open-ended purposely to have people argue about it on social media. And it's like, you know, not all engagement is good. Like, so
it's really not. Yeah, that clip is really stuck with me as well. It you're so right. It's like the response from the panel was heartbreaking, but also not that surprising to me. But the response from the crowd was what was so, I think, viscerally upsetting to me. Of just like, because I don't know how you sit up there, hear a crowd boo her, and not go, well, wait a second, like, this person has a valid question. This person's not attacking us in any sort of way. It's the worst impulses of this industry in a 2-minute clip, and it's just awful.
Right, and the people on that stage, one of them is J. Allen Brack, who writes in a statement, "I've always been against bro culture." And he's one of the two guys, you know, egging Afrasiabi on in his reply.
Well, and I think what's going to be really important is that, you know, in the lawsuit itself, you know, they say, well, J. Allen Brack has never really done any sort of disciplinary action toward the stuff. And like there's probably a paper trail that says as much. And so It's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes out. I do hope it goes to trial. Because I think it will be really interesting to see everything that comes out in discovery, if not opening up a lot of old wounds, which is upsetting, but necessary, I guess. Perk, this has been, thank you for shedding some light on this subject. It's been a very, very sobering and upsetting, 10 days or so. I know y'all are working
definitely.
Hard. I know y'all are working hard with reporting and trying to keep the community afloat. So y'all are doing great, but get some rest.
My cat just came over to start headbutting me because he knows this is a difficult topic to talk about, but it's an important one.
He's
happy
like
to be on the show.
He's like, you gotta chill. He's like, you gotta stop talking about this stuff. All right, we're gonna let you go. Thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks again for talking to me about that stuff, Perk. Since we recorded that interview, even more details have dropped about this case. The most troubling one that I've read was reported by Vice on Friday morning about a cybersecurity conference in August 2015, where Blizzard employees at a table were talking to different students and workers trying to get jobs in the cybersecurity industry. There was a woman there named Emily Mitchell, who is a security researcher looking for a job. She was wearing a shirt that said penetration expert on it. Of course, hacking in cybersecurity has everything to do with penetration. That's what folks call hackers being able to get into a network and do some damage. There's also something called penetration testing, which is basically a common practice where folks try to get into the inner workings of a website or server, a set of servers or a game or anything like that to try to find weaknesses and then to ultimately fix them. Anyway, when she approached the booth, she encountered a very disturbing experience with some Blizzard employees who had asked her if she was lost, asked if she was there at the conference with her boyfriend, if she even knew what pen testing was. And then they asked her some extremely inappropriate and disturbing questions about being, quote, personally penetrated, which I won't go too far into, but it was a disturbing sequence, to say the very least. Not super funny, haha, but at least a little bit of justice. Mitchell was actually approached years later, and she was the COO of a cybersecurity firm at the time. Blizzard was looking to hire the firm, and Mitchell was actually able to take them to task for the situation back in 2015. But this is just another example of Blizzard's rampant problems with boys club frat house style workplace. I'm not even sure those are appropriate names for what Blizzard is like at this point. But that is definitely another detail and another piece in the 2013 to 2020 timeline that California's lawsuit against Activision Blizzard will probably focus on. So we'll see if this actually makes it into the lawsuit itself, but it is a disturbing story to say the least. In reaction to the Activision Blizzard lawsuit and the walkout this week, 500 employees over at Ubisoft actually wrote a letter both praising the walkout for Activision Blizzard with their full-throated support of the folks that are doing the walkout, as well as some additional details about what problems that they have collectively at Ubisoft itself and also across the industry. They said many things, but I'll just read a little bit of it here. Quote, "To the management at Ubisoft, we, the undersigned, have had enough. It has been over a year since the first revelations of systemic discrimination, harassment, and bullying within Ubisoft came out. At the time, you acted surprised to hear of these acts. going on within your own company, and we gave you the benefit of the doubt. However, we have seen nothing more than a year of kind words, empty promises, and an inability or unwillingness to remove known offenders. We no longer trust your commitment to address these issues at their core. You need to do more. That does not mean more training sessions that go ignored by the people who need them most. That does not mean more reassurances and kind words. It means real, impactful action. The only way to fix something so ingrained is to remove the pillars that are complicit with it, be it by actively taking part or by supporting it. They concluded by saying, we need fundamental real changes within Ubisoft, with Activision Blizzard, and across the industry. To this end, we propose that Activision Blizzard, Ubisoft, and any other industry-leading publishers and developers collaborate and agree to a set of rules and processes for handling reports of these offenses. This collaboration must heavily involve employees in non-management positions and union representatives. This is essential to ensure that those who are directly affected by these behaviors are leading the change. So like I said, 500 different employees over at Ubisoft signed that letter. Yves Guillemot, the CEO of Ubisoft, has actually responded to that letter in an internal email. And I'll just go ahead and say that the workers are not impressed, but I'll let you decide. Yves says this, quote, "As many of you know, an open letter signed by current and former Ubisoft team members was published yesterday. For those of you who didn't see it, you can find the article here along with our external statement. This letter expressed strong support for the developers at Activision Blizzard and advocated for large-scale change within our industry. It also raised concerns about Ubisoft and our culture. We reviewed this letter as a leadership team, and we take the issues it raises seriously. For this reason, I want to personally reiterate our commitment to creating real and lasting change at Ubisoft." Yves Guillemot actually goes on to list some of the things that they have done, but I would say by and large they are more or less what the employee said. They are fairly empty promises about trainings and their kind words and some promises that have yet to occur in terms of doing surveys and audits and things like that, but not really directly addressing removal of specific folks that have been mentioned in the past. So yes, I would say that Guillemot's email was not super well received. The group that did the undersigned letter said, quote, "We are aware that the company has made some improvements, and we are happy to hear that Yves and the leadership team agree that this is not enough. However, Ubisoft continues to protect and promote known offenders and their allies. We see management continuing to avoid this issue. It is also worth clarifying that an invitation to reach out to company management personally is not the same as having a collective seat at the table." That last point about sending an invitation to collaborate with upper management falls a little bit in line with the fact that Activision Blizzard has apparently stopped doing company-wide meetings and all hands in lieu of doing more personal and small sessions with a few workers. This is a tactic. You know, Perk and I talked about it in the last segment. This is a tactic to basically isolate folks and to potentially turn folks against their better judgment and the will of the collective. So this is another thing of Ubisoft saying, hey, you can just come talk to us at any time, but that's not what those workers are asking for. Anyway, this is an ongoing issue. I definitely think that the workers who undersigned that letter to Ubisoft have the right idea. I think the entire industry probably needs to get together and talk about how to change these things. And we also need to see sweeping changes in terms of more unionization within these workplaces, as well as massive, massive changes in pay disparity, and also hiring practices have to be cleaned up. This is such a massive story that is going to continue as long as these incidents continue to occur. Okay, well, it feels kind of weird to just switch gears into video games, but we're going to do it. Annapurna Interactive had a showcase this week highlighting a bunch of games that are coming out in the next couple of years. From the jump, I'll just say I did not see a game in this session that I was not pretty excited about. So I'll go through the list. I think I'll hit everything on the list. So let's just go down. The Artful Escape gets a September 9th release date for Game Pass and PC. We saw this game at PAX East back in 2020, and it looked beautiful. A lot of folks are excited about it, and it's coming out pretty soon. Neon White, which is from Ben Esposito, who made Donut County. We saw a trailer for this a while ago, but we saw more gameplay. It looks absolutely bonkers. It is a card-based first-person creative speed-running game, essentially. It's got some shooter stuff. It's got some parkour stuff. Looks absolutely ridiculous. It's got some visual novel dating sim stuff, which I think was a totally new thing that we saw from this trailer. So folks should be definitely excited about that. I know Natalie Flores probably is. It is coming to Switch and PC this winter. I'm hoping to get Ben on this show and not too long from now. So definitely look forward to that interview if that comes to pass. That game looks totally bonkers. The creators of Falcon Age, Outer Loop, they are doing a collab with Annapurna. It is unnamed, but it is going to involve skateboarding and a lot of different cultural experiences. It looks really neat. Looks like a super diverse team as well. A Memoir Blue is revealed, and it's coming to, I think, every single thing you can imagine. Switch, console, PC, even iOS. Looks pretty neat. Jessica Mack, who made Sound Shapes, a really talented game developer from Canada, is collaborating with Annapurna on a music-focused adventure game. No title for that yet, but you know, whatever Jessica Mack is doing, you should probably pay attention to. Storyteller from folks in Buenos Aires. Hola, Buenos Aires. I used to live there. Storyteller looks like a very cool drag and drop storytelling game. You're supposed to basically, you get a prompt that says something like, the king is sad, and that's basically how the story is supposed to end, but you fill in the blanks. Like, how does the king become sad? You drop elements into each window. It looks amazing. I was loving it. There's actually a playable demo right now on Steam, and it's also going to come to Switch at some point. Solar Ash is a new game from the folks who made Hyper Light Drifter Heart Machine. That comes to PC, PS4, and PS5 on October 26th. It looks a little bit like The Pathless and also Shadow of the Colossus and Sonic the Hedgehog. It's wild. It looks really cool. Ivy Road is a brand new studio from the creators of The Stanley Parable and Gone Home. That's a really, really star-studded collab. They have an unnamed title in the works with the composer from Minecraft, which is exciting, and Annapurna Interactive will publish. Skin Deep is a sci-fi immersive sim from the folks that did 20 Flights of Loving. I absolutely love Brendan Chung in his games. Skin Deep looks amazing. So definitely check that out when it comes out, probably sometime next year, it seems like. The Pathless is coming to Steam on November 16th. What Remains of Edith Finch comes to iOS on August 16th. And I Am Dead comes to Xbox and PS4 on August 9th. And by the way, Telling Lies is a Sam Barlow game that's coming to Game Pass, as well as Goa, which is that really beautiful storybook storytelling. It's different than the last one, but it's more visual anyway. If you've played it, you know what I'm talking about. It's a really cool game. Stray is the game about the cat that we've seen in trailer for, but we saw a ton of gameplay footage, and I am obsessed with this cat. This cat does a ton of really realistic cat things. I love that idea. You're basically going to be exploring a post-apocalyptic kind of robot world. It seems like you're the only kind of organic thing around, which is interesting premise. That's going to come to PS4, PS5, and Steam at the beginning of 2022. No Code Entertainment. They are a Glasgow-based studio with a kind of a horror game resume. They are going to do a new collaboration with Annapurna. No other details there. And we left the show with the announcement that Outer Wilds, one of the best games of the generation, is coming to Nintendo Switch soon, and a new expansion called Echoes of the Eye was also announced and woven into the actual game as it exists. And if you're confused about that, well, so is pretty much everyone else. I won't spoil anything, but that's pretty intriguing. And that's going to come out on September 28th. That was a great show. They were like basically all bangers, the state of indie games, and really the state of Annapurna Interactive. Like, they are crushing it lately with their indie game slate. So definitely keep an eye on those games. They all look pretty cool. And okay, let's do a quick roundup to finish this segment so I can get you all ready for next week. August 3rd, folks will be able to get some new levels from new Pokemon Snap. It's a free update, which is pretty wild. I'm actually kind of surprised Nintendo is doing kind of a robust downloadable patch. But there will be new areas. Looks like there's also an area where you'll be shrunken and see giant Pokemon walking around. And you can take pictures of that, so that's pretty cool. So that's August 3rd. Dr. Mario World is, of course, the mobile game based on the NES hit Dr. Mario. The process of shutting that game down has actually started already. You'll basically be no longer able to buy the in-game currency, and the game itself will remain online until November 1st, but then it's going to be totally unplayable. So if you liked this game a lot, that's some bad news, but it's not totally surprising because, I don't know, it's one of those games that seemed like a weird fit. I think Dr. Mario is cool. I don't know if the world was ready for Dr. Mario free to play, pay to win, pay to play kind of game. Anyway, you can find some more details over at fanbyte.com from Kenneth Shepard, who wrote this great headline: Dr. Mario losing medical license to practice on phones, which I thought was a great headline. Good job, Kenneth. Also, Naughty Dog, Infinity Ward, and Bungie Vets have left those studios and are now forming a new studio, hiring in LA and San Diego. That studio is called That's No Moon. Yeah, that's like a Star Wars reference, I guess. No reason to think that they will be making Star Wars games, but like That's No Moon is like a Star Wars thing anyway. They're going to be making new action-adventure games that push the limits of gameplay and story. They've got $100 million from Smilegate, the folks that made Crossfire. That's a Korean developer and publisher. So there's a lot of folks on the studio that are pretty talented and good at making those big, beefy AAA action-adventure games, so we'll definitely keep an eye on that. If you are interested in going to PAX, that is at the beginning of September in Seattle, you may recall that they announced that they were not requiring vaccinations to go to this thing. It was actually the reason that the folks at fanbyte.com decided collectively that we would not actually go to the event this year. We believe collectively that the vaccine requirement would be the only thing that would make us feel safe about going, as well as some mask precautions and things like that, because the Delta variant is on the rise. Anyway, this week, Reed Pop, the folks that put on the event, have changed their tune a little bit, but they've said that they will require proof of a completed COVID-19 vaccination or a negative COVID-19 PCR or antigen test that has to be verified with a valid government-issued ID. Now, the proof of vaccination part makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad they're including that, but it's an either-or with a negative test. Those negative tests, it's a little bit unclear of when those could occur. If you get it done before you travel, the chances of you maybe acquiring the disease if you're unvaccinated by the time you get to PAX is pretty high. So let's say you have a negative test, and then you show up and it doesn't actually, doesn't actually mean anything. So this is kind of a weird thing to do. They made a statement also that said, quote, when PAX West 2021 badges were announced, the PAX team made the decision to communicate what we would commit to at that time rather than what we were working toward. While we let the community know the health and safety guidelines could evolve, we wanted to get it right, and we feel confident that verification of fully vaccination or negative test, along with continued face covering requirements for everyone, will create an environment that promotes the well-being of our PAX community. So they kind of passed the buck on like public guidelines at the time that they announced these things, instead of kind of seeing where things were headed. I don't know. I kind of think they were just trying to get as many tickets sold as possible, and they actually sold slower than I think they ever have before. So, not saying that that's like a one-to-one, but maybe think about it. Anyway, sorry, PAX. Maybe next year the Fanbyte crew is going to go to Providence, Rhode Island, and actually create a few days' worth of content together. We haven't seen each other in a long time. So instead of going to PAX, we're going to Providence and doing some stuff. That's, I think, the first time we've said that on a show. I'm saying it. So join us from September 9th to September 12th. We're going to be doing a whole lot of stuff together for the first time in a while, which is super exciting. Anyway, I'm going to get you ready for next week. folks, I want to get you ready for next week. We don't have a ton of game releases, but we have some notable ones. First up is Grime for Stadia and PC on August 2nd. It's an action game. I don't know much about it. I have to be totally honest with you, but it's coming to Stadia and PC. That might be all you need to know, not to be rude. But maybe check out Grime if you're into Stadia. On August 3rd, Limnus Gate, a shooter, is coming to PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Also coming on August 3rd is The Ramp, a game that Merrick K over at fanbyte.com is, I'm not going to say obsessed, that might be overstating it, but is very pleased with. It is kind of a little bit of a virtual toy instead of a video game, I would say. It's a skateboarding game, isometric. We've written a few pieces about it. It looks really cool. I definitely want to get my hands on it. Comes to PC on August 3rd. Dungeon Defenders Awakened comes to Nintendo Switch on August 4th. My Time at Portia, which is a kind of a simulation building crafting game that's been out for a couple of years for a bunch of consoles, but it's coming to Android and iOS on August 4th. The Falconeer, not to be confused with Falcon Age, is coming to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and Switch on August 5th after spending some time on Xbox. Those are the big game releases for this week. We also have some streaming service news. The beginning of the month is always a big time for rollover on Netflix. 30 Rock, all 7 seasons are coming to that streaming service. If you're curious about that, yeah, it was on Peacock. It's on Hulu. I think it's still there, but it's also coming to Netflix as well. So it's kind of an interesting one. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, also a great one. And The Edge of 17 was a cool little indie flick that I kind of liked when it came out. Those are all coming to the Netflix platform at the first of the month. A Mighty Wind is coming to HBO Max. That is a great Christopher Guest musical mockumentary that I like a lot, so you should check that out. Also, next week on HBO Max, don't forget that The Suicide Squad is coming out. It's gotten great reviews so far, so I guess I'll be checking it out. That is a James Gunn joint, of course. Also, on HBO Max, if you want to hate watch something, Sex and the City and Sex and the City 2, both films are coming to HBO Max. Those movies are absolutely terrible. You'll love it. Over at Hulu, not a ton to report. The Black Swan is coming to the service on August 1st. Contagion, if you want to scare the shit out of yourselves about pandemics, which, like, gosh, who doesn't want to do that right now? That's coming to Hulu. That's about it. No big shows coming to the service on the 1st. For Hulu, but on over at Amazon, if you want to see Moneyball, if you want to see Bobby Kotick's maybe first and only movie appearance, you can definitely do that if you're in a Bobby Kotick mood. I don't know why you would be. And over at Peacock, we got Crank and Crank 2 High Voltage. Those are definitely my two big recommendations for the Peacock service. Yeah, those are big ones. And then Paramount, they're getting Major League, which is the very best baseball movie ever made. It's super, super funny. It's super, super fun. You should definitely go check out Major League if you've never seen it. And that's going to do it for streaming services, and that's kind of what's going on this coming week. So let us know if we missed anything. Let us know if we missed some big game releases. We're always looking for stuff to play, especially on stream. You know what? I think it's time to check in with Paul. Let's check in with Paul. It's time to check in with Paul. It's Paul's time to shine. It's Paul's time to unwind and be on my show.
Wow. Wow. See? I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't warn you.
Wow. That was, good? That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That was great.
Oh, man. I've been thinking about it all morning. I'm like, well, how am I going to intro Paul on the show?
And I'm gonna need Jordo to
drop some beats. Yeah. We got to figure that out. How's it going?
Pretty good. It's been a pretty nice week. Although today it's pretty hot over here, but otherwise I'm excited for race weekend, baby.
Race weekend, baby. What's the big race? What is it this week?
This is the Hungarian.
Whoa.
Grand Prix?
Wow.
I'm furiously checking. Yes, it is. And I don't know if I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. I think before the last race, but the rivals, Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen, they collided. And it's been like such a controversial thing because, it's set the F1 community on fire because Red Bull's super angry. Obviously, they had to spend $1.8 million to fix their car.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad crash. Max Verstappen, the young Dutch driver, he had to go to the hospital and get checked up and everything, but he's thankfully all right. It's been interesting. So this weekend's, you know, everyone's tuning in because it's like, all right, what are the, like, it's good to have a fierce rivalry, but it's also like some of the politics stuff is starting to kind of muddy up the waters. But otherwise I'm so excited to watch this week's. I mean, if you're listening to this on Sunday, it's already happened. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Yeah, that's awesome. We watched the Annapurna showcase this past week. You made the keen observation that like pretty much all those games that they showed were bangers. Like, was there anything that stood out for you in that showcase?
Yeah, I mean, I am excited to play the Cyberpunk cat game. I think.
Oh my god, Stray looks so cool.
Yeah, that's the one we all deserve right now
after
the year we've had. And obviously more Outer Wilds. Outer Wilds is probably one of my favorite games of all time at this point. Yep. It is like, if you haven't played it, please do yourself a favor and play it. It's brilliant on every level. And more Outer Wilds makes me happy, which is, very exciting. How about you?
Definitely more Outer Wilds. Definitely a lot of like just general hey, how are they going to make that work? Kind of stuff with the Outer Wild thing without kind of changing the structure of the game that exists. It almost just feels like they're going to just inject new stuff that you'll have to do. Like, is it going to change playthroughs of that game? Like, without spoiling anything, that game works like this in this intricate watch where every single thing is in sync with something else. It is such a finely tuned and crafted game that like I'm just kind of bewildered about what that's going to be. I think Solar Ash is the game from the folks that did Hyper Light Drifter, and I'm just like, I don't know what that is. It looks like Shadow of the Colossus and like Sonic and like the Pathless and a bunch of stuff kind of combined into one, and I liked Hyper Light Drifter a lot, so definitely looking forward to that. Yeah, it's like every game on that showcase was really good. Annapurna is kind of good at their job, I guess.
Oh, you know, another one that I forgot to mention, that I played a couple years ago at E3 now, The Artful Escape, which I cannot wait for.
Yes.
I mean, Annapurna is just continuing to like prove that they're just like, they can't miss, and I'm hoping that they're, you know, that streak continues.
Yeah.
But even that showcase was really well done.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Just good overall.
It felt very it felt very expensive, if that makes sense. Like I know that's like, I don't know, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but it's like they put a lot of care into the showcase itself. It felt like a big deal, even though, you know, they're a bunch of fairly relatively low budget games compared to like AAA space. So. Yeah. It was cool. And Jessica Mack is making a follow up to Sound Shapes, not a specific sequel to that, but another music based game, which like looks really cool. So,
yeah,
I don't know. A lot of stuff. Have you been playing anything lately?
Honestly, the only thing I've really been consistently playing are there's only two games. Three, if you count Streets of Rage DLC, because I'm still playing that here and there.
Yeah.
F1 2021, which is, you know, obviously F1 for life now.
You have to.
And then I've been playing Skyward Sword, which a little sneak peek for, I guess. For next week's optional, not the one that's going live tomorrow, but I'm gonna have Danielle, a friend of the site, Danielle Riendo, on the optional, and we're gonna talk about Skyward Sword because I've been playing that. It's my first time playing it. I didn't play it the first time around, and it's interesting playing this dated thing that does have some parts to it that are cool, but it's really muddied by the awful controls.
the controls are so bad. The controls are so bad. Yeah, everyone's like, oh, there are cool things in this game. And I'm like, it's really tough to see them. But I think it does have some cool concepts. And like Danielle's talked a lot about that as well. Definitely looking forward to that conversation on the optional. But it's such a bizarre little relic from only 10 years ago. But it feels older than that somehow.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That's cool.
Other than that, I'm going to plug one last thing for this week, which Please. Is I cannot wait to speaking of Outer Wilds and Streets of Rage, I'm going to be on Volume Slider this week, this Friday.
Hey.
And I'm going to be talking about two of my four songs. So 50% of the show is going to be about Outer Wilds and Streets of Rage 2 in particular.
Hey.
I'm going to be just, doing my thing, geeking out. I'm like contractually obligated to talk about Streets of Rage whenever there's music, video game music brought up. So it's just part of my, part of the deal we made when I got brought on here. It's just like, I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to do it.
We're three episodes deep and no one's talked about Yuzo Koshiro yet. And I'm upset by that. So good.
Yeah,
I'm
glad or Motohiro Kawashima.
Right. Like, come on. Yeah. Come on now. Yeah. Come so on.
I'm going to write that wrong.
Yeah, please. I'm glad. Please listen to the optional, listen to Volume Slider. Those are amazing brand new shows on the network. New to us, at least, in the case of the optional. But that's awesome. Enjoy the Hungary race. I hope it went well as we go live on Sunday. Thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, no problem. Take it easy.
That was Paul's check-in with Paul. Paul's gonna go off and do some stuff, like watch some F1. Bye, Paul.
Bye, John.
Hey, that's gonna do it for this week's show. I want to thank my guest, Alexis Kusi, aka Perk, for stopping by and talking to me about the difficult and troubling situation over at Activision Blizzard. If you want to follow her on Twitter, you can do so over at Periculia, and everything over at wowhead.com. If you want to follow Paul, my wonderful producer, my perfect, precious producer, Paul Tamayo, I'm so sorry. You can follow him over at Polymayo. You can also listen to his wonderful podcast he hosts alongside Cam Brewster, The Optional, over on the FanBite Podcast Network, of course. And you know what, folks? Until next week, you're welcome.